more the fact that I don't get to eat beforehand.
No, I had a class before this.
Well, it's 275 minutes back. Classes back to back, so all my motivation's gone by the end of the day.
I feel you. I'm on the same boat. Yeah. Yo, what's up, man? You still get the library today?
Huh?
You can still get the library today?
Yeah, 3, right?
Yeah. I already solved it all.
All of it?
Like, I just have it, and I solved it all.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. But like, you don't need a strategy page, it's just kind of nice.
Yeah, I saw. You don't need analysis either, which is cool.
You don't need analysis?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go.
You said it's not reflexive.
Oh, no, it's because I thought that these were switched. She said it would be right if it was 4 mod B minus A, but it's B minus A mod 4. Because, like, it might be reflexive because you can't divide by 0 if they're the same. But
right.
If it's on the top 0 or anything, it's still factored, like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Zero,
so, wait, this.
Yeah,
the way this is set up means this is on top?
Yeah, it.
Interesting.
No. The way it's set up means it's on the bottom, but I did it wrong. Because I went to office hours off.
Oh, so you actually wrote them flipped, I understand.
Yeah,
okay.
So it should be like this.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense though.
Yeah, you do.
Nice, yeah.
And then she got the negations. It's for this one. It's not transitive because if z equals x,
mm-hmm.
The difference is 0.
If z equals x.
Yeah, so if you have it with x and y, then y and z, but z equals x, you do it with x and z.
So is it initial?
It's
okay.
Not critical.
Okay, interesting. I didn't think you could use the same one, but I guess that does make sense.
Thanks for the machine.
Okay, cool. Dude, you're a hard worker when it comes to doing these before. Like, I'll read them and like write a little bit down, but you go all the way. I respect it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know. I saw it. It was just in the back of my mind.
Yeah, nice.
Thanks, man.
How's it going?
Good, how about you?
Good.
I wish there was a snack machine nearby.
You wish there was a snack machine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get any room to eat lunch or anything before I get here, so. For breakfast.
I'm trying to think of where. Is there like a.
There's a snack machine, don't pay at the $10.
Gotcha.
There is a vending machine over here, but it only serves drinks. Cool, but I want to eat something.
Totally.
I don't get to eat breakfast before I leave my room either.
Well, how's everybody's life?
Otherwise, pretty good.
Do you think it's funny? Like, nobody likes, or like, Owen's like, it's good, and then everybody else is like, aw, man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've somehow made sure not to bring any markers except for this red one.
What a joy.
Yeah, let's check. All right, so just a reminder, you've got your group exercise due tomorrow. Can you all see that okay? Like, I guess I'm asking if anyone has like a colorblind issue. Okay.
You should be able to see even if they're colorblind because it's on white.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. Good. I just don't want it to be too hard to see. So, and if the glare starts making it weird too, just let me know. All right, so, can't even remember what we were doing. That's real. I think we're talking about reflexive, symmetric, and transitive for different relations and talking about how to prove those. And then we started talking about Rn. So we keep talking about this particular relation, Rn being pairs of integers according to the rule that this pair belongs in this relation if b minus a is evenly divisible by the integer n. Sound familiar? Okay, so I could say, I'll write that kind of in shorthand this way. If I take the difference of b with a and I divide it by n, I get a whole number. And it could be negative, so I'm gonna allow for any integer. And if the difference with b with a is zero, in other words, if b and a are the same thing, if I take 0 divided by n, I get 0, so I'm also allowing for that, right? Okay, so you have this relation on your homework on the group exercise when n is 4. Okay. All right, so what we showed, I'm starting to remember, we did the scary graph. Do you recall the scariest graph of all? Okay, good. All right, so we did n equals 3 in class. So this is on group exercise 3. When we did n equals 3 in class, we took the relation and we graphed it using vertices and edges. Yeah? So we have big, infinite, undirected. I don't know why I put big there. I think it's implied by infinite. I was going to be informal, call it a big scary graph, and then I thought, we have words for that. Okay, infinite undirected graph. And what we showed is that we could actually pull that big scary graph apart, that there were parts of the graph that actually don't touch any parts of another part of the graph. So it's disconnected. And anytime a graph is disconnected, that means we can pull it into separate parts, and then we can talk about how many parts it has that can't be pulled apart. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So, does anybody in here like work on cars? I mean, you guys work on like computers, I guess. Are there parts of computer hardware that are not connected to other parts of the computer's hardware, like in a meaningful way? I don't.
Huh? Case fans.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
Yes. It's all attached to the motherboard.
Maybe like a wireless mouse.
That's beautiful.
With older cars, the brake system would be completely independent of the gas system.
Okay, I like that. Let's go with cars. Cool. So, all right, so even though all of these things make up a car, right, there's apparently a gas, like an acceleration part of the engine and then a braking system, yeah? And those two parts not being connected mean that if we were to take the car apart, we wouldn't actually have to disconnect those two components from each other to take the car apart. Does that make sense? So we could basically like take all these parts out of the car and imagine that you could take the shell off of the car. Maybe you could actually pull all of the braking system out without disconnecting it from itself or any of its parts, but you wouldn't actually have to disconnect it from the gas system either. Make sense? Okay, cool. All right, so it's disconnected, but has three special, I just have opinions. I'll say objectively what's happening. It has three connected components. So basically, I'm just gonna put graph of R3 here and we're not gonna draw it, okay? But by disentangling, by which I mean we're just gonna pull the connected components apart so that they're separate, we were able to have one part of the graph that had things like -6, -3, 0, 3, 6, 9, etc. So those integers were separated. And in this part, everything was connected to everything else. So 6 and 3 were connected. Sorry, -6 was connected to -3 and vice versa. So we said, oh, well, since this always has these symmetric edges, let's just replace all of them with line segments so that it's undirected. So all of these integers are connected to one another. They are all connected by jumping over twos. They are all connected by jumping over in lengths of three. I mean, -6 is literally connected to every single thing in this picture. Okay, everybody is connected to everybody else. So every single vertex, if I were to zoom in on -6, there would be infinitely many things touching it. Cool? Mm-hmm. And there's loops. So not only is every other vertex attached to every other vertex, but every vertex is also attached to itself. Yeah? So in your homework, what you're doing, I think it's on number 3, or part C, I'm not sure how I did it. I think it's number 3. You're actually proving that this is an equivalence relation. So it's reflexive, symmetric, and transitive. And this graph is hopefully showing that when you pull a chunk away, it has all of those properties. Everybody is very much connected to everybody else. So that's just one component. And that one component of the graph, we gave it the name (0, 3). So 0 is like a member of the team. There's 0. And we can get everywhere else by taking strides of length 3. So we'll talk about how to define this set more explicitly in a second. But picture-wise, that's what it is. And then we had two other chunks of the graph that could be separated, like the part of the graph containing 1, 4, 7, 10, -2, -5, etc. And that all of those vertices in the graph are just as connected as these are. So lots of connections everywhere, loops everywhere, just crazy chaos. Okay, and then the third component. What numbers are in the third component?
-1.
Good. So these don't have it yet. So we'll see -1. What would be next to it?
4.
-4? What about to the right? two. So we're just taking strides of length three. So once we have one member of that component, everybody else follows by taking strides of length three in the positive or negative direction. So this is team one and all of its friends that I can get to by taking steps of length three. And this is team two with all of its friends that I can get to by taking steps of length three. Make sense? Okay, so this graph disentangled into three parts. So this is a big theorem. I think I wrote this down, but if a relation R on a set A is an equivalence relation, that means it's as nice as possible. So it's reflexive, symmetric, and transitive. Then, and I'm not just talking about that relation, I'm talking about any relation that is as nice as that one, but it does apply to that example. So if you have an equivalence relation, then the relation does what's called partitions. It partitions the set A into what are called equivalence classes. So instead of me like formally defining partitions and equivalence classes, well, I can define equivalence classes for you. We'll see what the equivalence classes are for Rn. But it's pretty nice to see. So if I draw A maybe as a rectangle as opposed to a circle. So A is a set. So all of its elements are represented by dots inside of this block. Cool. So the idea is the relation goes around and it says, okay, that element is gonna be related to some elements, some other elements in A potentially, but it's going to completely isolate those elements. So it's gonna create a disconnected component forming one equivalence class. And then it'll go through and it'll do it again. Doesn't have to be the same number of things, but it totally divides up the structure of A into these classes. So like, take A to be the set of marbles, a set of like a bag of like 20 marbles, and define a relation on the bag of marbles as to be a marble A is related to a marble B, not if they're the same marble, but if they are the same color. And let's suppose we have a bag of marbles that consists of red, yellow, and blue marbles, yeah? So that relation is going to be reflexive because a marble always has the same color as itself. If a marble has the same color as a second marble, then the vice versa statement would be true, so it's symmetric. It's also transitive because if, okay, we're marbles now. If I'm the same color marble as Owen and Owen's the same color marble as David, then I must be the same color marble as David. So it's also transitive, right? Okay, so it is an equivalence relation. So what I want you to imagine is that relation effectively will sort the marbles into blue, yellow, red. Those would be the equivalence classes. So here's my bag of marbles. Here's blue, yellow, red. Does that make sense? There are other equivalence relations we could put on the set. Sorry, there are other relations you could define on a bag of marbles. But it doesn't, they don't have to be equivalence relations. So not every relation on the same set will be an equivalence relation, but when it is, it's super nice and you can pull stuff apart. So here's blue, yellow, red. If the integers were an infinite number of marbles, and yeah, does that make sense? Okay, cool. So, let me say this formally. An equivalence class of a relation R on a set A is a subset of A, So there are several equivalence classes potentially. It's a subset of A, which satisfies the following. Should we give it a name so I can talk about it? Can I call the subset B? Okay. So I've got a subset of objects B inside of my set A. So maybe I'm talking about this collection of objects. And what I want to describe is how they are all the same based on the relation and nothing else is similar to them. So first of all, if X and Y belong to B, sorry, let's do this. Two elements in my set A both belong to B, if and only if they are related. Okay, so the way to read this is, look for any two elements in my set A. Let's look at these. Let's call this one X1. Let's call this one X2. Okay? Okay. So those two elements belong to the same equivalence class precisely when those two elements are related. In my picture, let's call this B. Let's call this one some other equivalence class, C. Do they belong to the same equivalence class? No, X1 lives in B, but X2 doesn't. All right, so let's try now for X1 and X3. So X1 and X3 both belong to that equivalence class, and so what this is saying is they have to be related. I don't think I actually need two parts. I think that's it. So an equivalence class is a subset of A such that anytime you look at two elements from the set A, they'll belong to this subset B precisely when they're related. And if they're not related, they better not live there together. Tyler.
Do you also need to include a part saying like the elements can't be in multiple subsets, kind of? Like they can't relate to any other element outside of its set?
So that is exactly what it means to partition. So maybe I should define partition. Does that sound okay? Yeah, I'll formally define partition. So partition is both a verb and a noun. So I can talk about the act of partitioning a set, and I can also describe the result of doing that, which is called a partition of the set. Okay, so a partition of a set A is a collection of subsets. I'm going to give them numbers B1 through Bn. So it's some number of subsets. I don't really care how many there are. So all of those are subsets of A such that two things. The first thing is that if I union all of them together, so I take all of the subsets' contents and I pour them all into the same box, that should recover all of A. Okay? So that should fill A back up. Secondly, what Tyler said is whenever I look at the intersection of two of these subsets, it had better be the empty set whenever those subscripts are not the same. So basically, if I'm looking at two subsets, say B3 and B7, they better have nothing in common. So that's what it means to have a partition of a set. Is that okay? Okay, so when I say a relation partitions, like a verb, a relation can have the effect on a set of creating these subsets, which are called equivalence classes. So the way that a relation partitions a set is by creating equivalence classes based on the relation, like I'm the same color marble as Tyler. It puts us in the same spot, and it turns out, this is a theorem, it turns out that equivalence relations will always form partitions. So this will always be true. Does that make sense? Do you want to, I don't know if it's worth our while to prove this, but it's kind of an abstract concept, so maybe we ought to just do some examples. Does that sound okay? Okay. All right. All right, I'm gonna do some really stupid examples. Is that okay? Is it though? Okay. Sorry, when I say stupid, that's not to insult us or the examples. Mostly, there are some silly examples, I should say, that are worthwhile to see one time. When I was in grad school, I took topology and we did a lot of this stuff, kind of in a different context, but similar. And she would always do these two examples first for the entire year. We would just be like, So let's play with the same set A. I'm gonna give it four elements there. Okay. So the first relation I'm gonna define on the set, I'm gonna make sure it's an equivalence relation, and we haven't proven this yet. I'm gonna make the relation R, which should consist of pairs of elements from A. I'm gonna make it all of A cross A. So literally every single possible pairing that I could ever think of is in the relation. This is called a trivial relation because you didn't like make any choices. Does that make sense? Okay, it's as large as possible. So this is the largest possible relation you could define. Okay, turns out this is an equivalence relation. Do you want to prove it? So it's reflexive. Why would it be reflexive?
Well, every element is paired with every other element, so.
So in particular,
itself.
Every element is paired with itself, yeah? So what we are saying is, let me say this. For all A in A, for all B in B, the relation we're defining is that AB belongs to the relation. Okay, so everything has been tossed in. So it is reflexive exactly because of what Tyler said. For all A in A, A comma A belongs to the relation. That's certainly a consequence of A being able to be paired with anything else, right? Because all ABs belong to R. Okay. Why is it symmetric? So this is saying anytime you have a pair, A1, A2, belonging to the relation, that its reverse also belongs to the relation. But this relation has everything you could ever want, yes? So that's always gonna be satisfied. Is it okay if I just yes, again, because everything is in there that you could ever want. The exact same reasoning for transitive. Yes. Because everything is in there that you could possibly want. Okay. All right. I actually wrote down the set A and we didn't even have to say that. So it turns out that for any set A, the relation that's defined as A cross A is always an equivalence relation on a set A. Okay, so let's look at the equivalence classes, yes? So an equivalence class, the set of equivalence classes should partition my set into distinct parts. How many distinct parts do you think this relation sorts us into?
One.
Everybody is related to everybody else. A, B, C, and D are all related to each other and vice versa. So there's no sorting to be done. Yeah? Does that make sense? So the only equivalence class, I'll put classes and I'll put an X through ES because there's only one. The only equivalence class of A given by the relation R is A itself. Okay. A is a subset of itself. The end. Okay. Does that feel too silly? Okay. I'm going to do what's called the diagonal relation. So all I'm going to include are pairs of elements with themselves. Okay. This is also called like the discrete relation because we'll see what happens with our, maybe I should not use A because it's, can I call it X? X is taking the values of A, B, C, and D. My bad. I shouldn't have used A's there either. All right, so now my relation is saying I only want things to be related when they are paired with themselves. So that's pretty isolating, right? So this is still, you want to check that it's an equivalence relation? Okay. This will be the smallest possible equivalence relation. It's not the smallest possible relation we could define, but it is the smallest possible equivalence relation. Okay. Why is it reflexive?
That's what it's looking for.
Yeah, the relation literally says, scroll through all of A. So for A, B, C, and D, put the pair of that element with itself into the relation, yeah? So it is by definition reflexive. Why is it symmetric? Symmetric. Let's go ahead and suppose we've got some pair xy in the relation. How do we show that yx also has to be in the relation?
Does y equal x?
Good. So because of how our relation is defined, y and x have to be equal. Okay? That's the relation that we've set up. The relation is pretty isolating. Okay, so the only time that this would happen is when the two elements are equal. In other words, the pair xy is actually the pair x with itself. Okay? So, if I flip the order yx, we want to check that yx must belong to the relation. What is yx? Well, we just said if x, y belongs to the relation, that y and x have to be the same. So yx would have to be the pair of x with itself. That's why it's symmetric. Okay. Transitive, I think, is really interesting. You'll see why.
is the little note thingy? Y equals X, where are those?
It's because I'm using it twice. So the first time we used it is when we said, okay, if I had something in the relation, it would have to do this. And then I used it again right here. Yeah. Okay, cool. So suppose, transitive says, go ahead and suppose you've got three elements in your set. And it's the case that x1 and x2 are related, and x2 and x3 are related. So that's the setup. How do you conclude that it is transitive? Same game as what we just did. So if x1 comma x2 belongs to the relation, what does the relation say has to be the case for the two things? Tyler?
They're equal.
Okay. And what about x2 comma x3?
They're equal.
They are also equal. That's a consequence of how we've defined our relation. Is that okay? Can you say anything about how x1 and x2 relate? Or sorry, x1 and x3? If x1 is equal to x2 and x2 is equal to x3, and I mean equals, like they are the same thing. What can you say about x1 and x3?
X1 equals x3.
Good. Thus, the pair x1, x3, what does it satisfy?
The relation?
Yeah, it satisfies the relation. All right, so it is transitive. All right, that sounds really stupid, but let's just think about this. So like, suppose A, B, C, and D are Jake, Tyler, Carson, and Owen. The relation says that you four are related only when you are yourself. So there's no relationship here between any of the four of you. So if it were the case that two people were related and two people were related where there was this common person, turns out that all of these elements are the same human. They're all Owen. Yeah? So asking if Owen is related to Owen is kind of silly, but it's true because of how the relation's defined. It's to be the lonely relation. Let's call that one the lonely relation. All right, what do the equivalence classes look like? How does this relation, the lonely relation, partition the set? Yep. So the partition of A into subsets looks like, so A, I'm going to write it as the union of sets, and the sets will consist of single people. So when I want to talk about a set containing a single element, I still need my little curly brackets, yeah? So it's the element A by itself, the element B by itself, the element C by itself, and the element D by itself. And these little tiny baby sets, does their union fill all of A back up? If I poured all of them into the same box, would I recover A? If A is A, B, C, D. Okay, and do they have any intersection? Do any two of them have anything in common? No, so this is a partition. This is definitely a partition of A. And it's the case that if I look at any one of these subsets, the only things that are inside of it are elements that are related to each other. Does that make sense? Okay, let me do one more that doesn't feel quite so like contrived? Because both of these are pretty contrived, yeah? A, its partition over here is A. That's its partition. Okay. It's hard to make these up. Let me define R. Here we go. I'm just going to have to like make it up. So we're still using the set A as A, B, C, D. Is that okay? Okay. So, is what I've defined reflexive?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because A and A, B and B, C and C.
Good. So it's reflexive because this relation is defined to contain each element paired with itself. So if, for example, DD wasn't there, even though the relation contains AA, BB, and CC, it would not be reflexive. It would fail to be reflexive because it's missing DD. Okay? So it is reflexive. It needs all four of those elements paired with themselves. Is it symmetric? Is it the case that whenever X1 is related to X2, that the reverse is related? So I just have to go through. Okay, I see AA. Is its reverse in the relation? Its reverse is itself, so yeah, sure. Okay, AB. Is the reverse of AB in the relation?
Mm-hmm.
Is the reverse of BA in the relation? What about BB? CC? CD? Yep, its reverse is right there. What about DC? Yep, its reverse is right there. And DD? Oh. So DD's reverse is itself and it's in there. Yeah. Yeah, Ryan.
So if AB didn't have like BA, then it wouldn't be?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So checking, again, I haven't written down those definitions, but they are for all statements. All three of them are for all statements. So when you check symmetry, if I gave you a relation that was listed out like this instead of like a formula definition, which is what you have on group exercise 3, okay, this is another way for me to, this is like roster form for a relation, right? Like I could give it to you in set builder or in roster, because they're sets. So you do have to go through and like exhaustively check and make sure that every element's flip is in there to check symmetry. Cool. Yes. We had to brute force check that. All right, what about transitive? This is hard to check. Can you find two elements where the second coordinate of the first element matches the first coordinate of the second element? How about these two? There's the same element twice, B and B. Is it the case that the outside elements also belong to the relation? Yep, right there. All right, what about BA and AB. Now I've got the A on the inside. Are the outer elements related? They are, yeah? Is that okay? So transitivity is relying on the fact that it's actually reflexive as well. So like if it weren't reflexive, we wouldn't be transitive because we are seeing that if I have the inner coordinates matching, the things on the outside are gonna end up looking like matching stuff based on how the relation's defined. This is just an example. So you have to check all of those. Check all of them. All cases of that. It's a lot to check. Is that okay? Okay. Do you want to check one more just for practice? Okay, how about, does CC belong to the relation?
Yeah.
What about CD? Okay, is it the case, since these inner coordinates match, that the outer coordinates, what are the outer coordinates?
C and D.
C and D. Is it the case that C and D is in the relation?
Yes.
Yes. I know these are weird checks, but that's how you check. Okay. And it's funny because even though this one was part of the hypothesis, it becomes part of the conclusion based on what we paired it with. All right, it's transitive. Okay, this thing is an equivalence relation. Theorem, equivalence relations partition the set. So what I want you to think about is how does this relation partition the set A into the union of disjoint subsets? What elements are related to the others? Who's A related to? B, is it related to any of the other elements in any way? It's just related to itself and B, right? Okay, so the equivalence class that A belongs to should only contain B. Does B have any relationship with any other element other than A in itself? No. So A and B live together in their own subset in this partition. What other elements live together?
C and D.
C and D. If I union those two subsets together, do I get back A? Does every element belong to at least one of these subsets from the set A? Yep, A, B, C, and D are all counted for. Do these two subsets have any intersection? Do they have anything in common? No. So this is a partition of A by this relation. Okay, so the relation did that. It basically said, look at who's related to who, put them in a subset together, and don't put anybody else in there. And you're only going to be able to do this when you have an equivalence relation. If you don't have an equivalence relation, you cannot separate this way. Does that make sense? Okay. Because there will be ambiguity about where an element has to live. Well, it's related to these guys, and it's related to these guys, but those guys aren't related to each other, so there's trouble. All right. Good job.
I have a newfound respect for you. How much you write, because I'm trying to write now.
It's a lot.
Writer's cramp.
Totally get you. Yeah, I have, actually it's gone down because I do write on whiteboards so much now and I like, and I type a lot. Well, I was just gonna say I have this like, when I was in elementary school, I have this like enormous callus on my ring finger where my pencil rests. Does anybody else have a callus where they write?
No.
No.
Okay.
Like, it looks like I have a growth on my finger. It's like a big old lump. Who else? Does anybody write? Like, where do you hold your pencil? I'm curious. We're the same person. You put it on your middle finger. You put it on your ring finger. You're cool. You put it on your middle finger. Middle finger. Sam, your middle finger. Jeff, your... Jeff Coat. Sorry. Last name first. Sorry. Middle finger.
Ring fingers. Yes. Middle finger seems more natural.
I think that's how you're taught. You're taught to do it this way. I just feel so much more control. Yeah?
We're just rebels.
Yeah.
Hill West control actually is slipping on.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, thanks for playing. That was fun.
Sorry about that.
Thought we'd take like a break here for a second. Okay, this theory, I know this seems like really silly what we're talking about, but when you have a bunch of data points, what you can do is you can define a relation on the data points. And if the relation is nice, and by which I mean it is an equivalence relation, so it has all three of our favorite properties, it will sort the data into categories. Freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, for example, right? So equivalence classes and equivalence relations and partitionings of sets, they're all important things. All right, back to this. I want to go back to, let's go back to R. Do you want to do R3 or R4, or do you want to do a different number now to play? All right. Ryan, pick your favorite. It's 5?
Oh, wait. My favorite number is 9.
Okay. Oh, that's too many. 5. Good choice. I was like, ooh, I'm going to have to write all of these down. Okay. R5. As a relation, it looks at pairs of what types of numbers? I'll tell you, sorry. It's a relation on the integers. So it's going to look at pairs of integers, and what do they have to do? In order to be related in this particular way.
B minus A over 5 is 0.
Close.
Or remainder 0.
Good. B over A, B minus A over 5 has remainder 0.
Oh, we should do this with 4.
Why?
I don't care.
No specific reason.
Let's do it with 5, because I want you to, you'll get other experience. Okay. That was really subtle, Carson. I can't even wink. Okay. All right. So, you are proving on your homework that R4 is an equivalence relation. They all are. Okay? So, these are your favorite relations of all time, where 5 could be replaced with any positive whole number. They're your favorite, I promise. Okay. We really like them when it's prime, but I'll get to that later. Okay. So what I want to talk about one more time is how this relation partitions the integers. So the set that the relation is defined on will get sorted. So what we've seen a couple times is, if I were to draw the graph of this relation, I'd be able to pull it apart into 5 chunks. And we've drawn it a couple times, so now instead, I want to try to describe this in set builder notation. Give me some numbers, some integers. Maybe let's do this in roster first. We'll describe it in roster form first. And then we'll do set builder, because set builder is the cool one. Give me some numbers that belong in the same connected component as 0 when I take steps of length 5.
0. Yes.
Take a step of length 5. Where do you get? 5. Another one. Okay. Now let's go to the left of 0 by a length 5 step.
-5.
Mm-hmm. -10. All right, those are just 5 members, but looking at that, I can kind of guess what it's trying to describe, yeah? So that's sufficient for roster form. I don't think that that's enough. I think the 10s are enough. Okay, what we want to do is we want to give a formula for all of the numbers in that set. What do they all look like? They all look like 5n. And if it's okay, I'm going to use the letter Q. Is that okay? And what is Q, Owen? Like what type of a number do we want it to be?
Oh, it's an integer.
Good, it's an integer. Because we want negative numbers. We want 5 times negative 1 and 5 times negative 2 in order to get the steps to the left, right? And we don't want fractions, so we don't want real numbers or anything like that, because it's not like I'm trying to get 5 halves. That's not in the set either. So we want integers. We want to include 0, so that we multiply 5 times 0, we get this one. When q is 1, we get this one. When q is 2, we get this one. So what q is effectively doing is it's telling you how many steps to take, yeah? How many steps? And in which direction, positive or negative, to take from your base point of 0. Cool? All right, the next one's a lot more interesting. All right, let's do roster again. Give me a member of this connected component. Give me the obvious one.
One.
One. Don't sound sad. One. All right, take a step of length 5 in the positive direction.
6.
Another one?
11.
Good. All right. Take a step of length 5 in the negative direction.
-4.
Good. Another one? Okay. All right, so now I want to describe these numbers with a closed formula.
(5q+1).
Yes. All right, they all are basically, if we look to the previous set, yeah, all of these numbers, if we just add 1 on positive 1 to each of them, that'll send us to these set, to these points, right? Negative 10 plus 1 gives me a negative 9. Negative 5 plus 1 is negative 4. 0 plus 1 is 1. 5 plus 1 is 6. 10 plus 1 is 11. Is that okay? So essentially reutilizing that formula, but adding 1 to all of the 5 Qs is going to produce these. Love it. And we still want Q to cycle through all of the integers, yeah? Good. So what this is saying is these are all the locations you can get to by taking q steps of length 5 from the position 1. All right. All of the others are defined similarly, but let's be crazy. Who's in team 4 just set builder notation right off the bat?
5q plus 4.
Good. Cool. Okay. So if you wanted, if you had set builder notation to start and you wanted to get a couple elements in the set, like actually have like numbers that you could talk about, just plug in integers. So like if we plug in 0 for Q, 5 times 0 plus 4 is 4. So I know that 4 is an element of this set. So let's write a couple things. So for example, 4 belongs to this set bracket 4 sub 5. Who else lives in there? What about when Q is 1? Screw it. What about when Q is 30? Q is 30. What number do you get? 154. So when q is 30, which is an integer, that's telling us that the integer 154 belongs to bracket 4 sub 5. Okay, so it's really easy for us to generate examples of integers that live in that equivalence class. Seem okay? All right, do you want me to confuse you a lot for just a second, where we remove the 5 and we talk more generally?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do. All right. Actually, let's do one more. One more. So regardless of who the representative is, let me call the representative R. Give me a general formula for bracket R sub 5. So instead of 0, 1, or 4, just in general, who lives in this set?
Five Q plus R.
Good job. 5Q plus R, where Q cycles through the integers. Good. So these are all of the numbers that I can get to by starting at R and taking some number of strides of length 5. Yeah? Okay, let's be confusing. Now consider the relation R sub n on Z for some positive integer n. Let's start here. What does the set rep 1 sub n look like? Where can I get to if I start at 1 and take strides of length n?
N q plus 1.
Good, n q plus 1. So the n was telling you how large your steps are. That was what 5 was doing over there. And this one is a representative starting point where you can walk from. And Q is the thing that is moving here, not N. N is fixed from the relation. So N could be 7. All right, then.
Positive.
Do what?
Does it have to be positive?
N has to be a positive number. Yes.
Does Q or no?
Q does not have to be positive. It can be negative. Yeah, so Q can be any integer. R sub n, the n is fixed and it has to be a positive whole number. All right, ready? Who lives in this equivalence class?
N Q plus R.
Okay, so the way to read this. This is the equivalence class of the representative R. Another way to say it is it's the set of all integers related to R via the relation R sub n. Okay, so in super mathy terms, this is the equivalence class of R, I should say, with respect to R sub n. Cool? Okay, we're about to start doing things. So just to be like so incredibly clear. Okay. Many abstract examples. I just want us to write this in so many ways that we really feel good about it.
Quick question.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like a new page.
Or yeah, I would.
Half a page.
Oof. I'll go to the next one. Crazy. No, go back. I'll do crazy stuff on the next page. Okay. B, the integer B belongs to the equivalence class of A with respect to N. Tell me how we would know. Give me some different ways to say that. So an element B lives in the equivalence class for A when? I'll give you an easy one. When the pair AB satisfies the relation. Okay, that's what it means for an element to belong to the same equivalence class as A is when it's related to A. Cool. you use set notation? Or what we set in the set notation? What does it mean for B to belong to the set? That means it looks like something. What does it look like? So that means B has the form N times Q. The representative's name is A, right? Y'all okay with that? So for B to belong to this equivalence class, that means when A is the representative, B has this form, NQ plus A, for some integer Q. Is that okay? Okay, I'm going to use this formula. So what this says is, let's subtract A over, let's divide it by N. So this is if and only if B minus A divided by N equals Q for some integer Q. In other words, B minus A is evenly divisible by N. And now I'm going to introduce new notation. Okay. And we'll start using this one the most. So these are all equivalent ways to say the exact same thing. The last one is something you may have seen before, and it's to say that A is equivalent to B mod N. So this is red. A is equivalent to B mod N. How are you doing? Do you have questions? A lot of notation. Talk to me.
What is mod mean?
Modulo. So we're going to be doing modular arithmetic. When I think, like, the word modulo or modded out by, those words are used a lot in abstract mathematics. And what it is basically saying is, like, up to a factor of n, these are the same. Yeah? So in other words, if I can get from A to B by taking strides of length n, then I'm going to call them the same. In other words, they live in the same connected component of the scary graph. So we're basically starting to look like we're going to zoom out, and instead of looking at the integer pieces, we're going to look at the connected components of the graph as a singular object. Does that make sense? So we will stop distinguishing between two numbers or two integers, A and B, which belong to the same equivalence class. Okay. Effectively, the equivalence classes in and of themselves are going to act as singular objects. So the way I think about it is, Ellen's all about soccer. Okay. So when we talk about, give me a tournament.
Intramural, 77. Or like in real life?
Yeah, sure.
World Cup,
okay. So in the World Cup, we don't really keep track. I mean, you do keep track of like single player stats, but typically people are talking about the success of who? Players or of
teams?
So we're going to be thinking about these equivalence classes as having team members, all of those different integers that are related to each other, okay? But we're just going to talk about the teams instead. So we're going to kind of like zoom out the teams are going to have interactions with each other, and we're going to define algebraic operations between the teams. Sound good? Does it though? How can you tell? That's a good question, yeah? How can you tell if two numbers are in the same equivalence class? We have like a pretty nice formula up there.
If they relate to each other.
Yeah, good. So like if they're related to each other, and another way to say that is by writing it this way, right? The way to figure this out, so just want to make one more point, because I think this will come up from some different people depending on what degree program you're in. If you end up taking cryptography, you will see this. So how do you know? I'm going to use numbers now. I'll say, how do you know if B, I'm going to call it 71, belongs to, let's do 8, where you take steps of 11. How do you know? So here, there's A and there's N. So what we said was 71 belongs to this team if and only if I can write 71 as there's N times Q plus 8 for some Q, an integer. Okay. So you can tell if 71 belongs to 8's team if you can do this. How do you do this? How do you figure out what Q is? You do what's called the division algorithm, and it's exactly what you think it is. You take 71 divided by 11, and you try to see what the remainder is. Make sense? So let's take 71 divided by 11. How many times does 11 go into 71?
6.
Okay. How many times does 11 go into 5? 0. So my remainder is 5. So what this is actually telling me, so this is a no. Nope, it can't happen. It's actually the case that 71 is 11 times 6 plus 5. Therefore, 71 belongs to 5's team. So the way you figure out what team an integer belongs to is you do the division algorithm. Okay. Do the division algorithm with the n value. So in general, take b divided by n and look for your remainder here. Your remainder is what's going to tell you what team it lives in. Okay. So b belongs to a's team if and only if, when I take b divided by n, I get remainder a. Or that is a remainder. Yeah. All right, how do you feel about that? definitely said this like a very long time ago. I just said it to someone in office hours, but I really mean it. At this juncture in the class, there's so much notation and just a variety of ways to think about things that I think note cards or some sort of like glossary that you keep at the back of your notebook would be really important. There's just a lot to keep straight. Like, there are four variables here. It's a lot. Okay. Adding and multiplying two equivalence classes, AKA teams. So I just want you to think about the equivalence classes as having several members in their team, but I'm actually going to think about operations between the teams, not between the team members. So I'm gonna take some team A times some team C, and I actually wanna define what I mean by that. So what I mean by that is I want to take the product of A and C, because they are integers, yeah, they're integer representatives of their teams. I'm actually going to take their product, but I don't want that product to be the only thing that you see. Okay, the product is taken, but maybe it's bigger than N. So what I want you to do is I want you to reduce it mod N before you're done. So let's do an example. Let's take 71 sub 11 times, we checked to see if it, so it's not an 8. Okay, let's take those two blocks products. Okay. What's magical about taking the product of teams is what's called well-definedness. So even if I change the representative, as long as I replace the representative with another member of the same team, it won't change the resulting product, which is like magic. So what team does 71 actually live in?
Five.
So in taking the product of 71's team with 8's team, I'm actually gonna make the problem a little bit simpler for me to do in my head by replacing 71's representative with its smallest representative, which is 5, that's like positive. Is that okay? Because they're on the same team? These two things are equal, mod n. What is 5 times 8?
40.
So I want to reduce 40 mod 11 before I stop. So basically what I'm looking for is the remainder of 40 when I divide by 11. How many times does 11 go into 40?
3.
Gives me 33. What's left over to get to 40? 7. Okay. Eventually we're going to drop the little brackets, but that is what I mean by defining the product of two teams to be a new team. Okay, so the product of two equivalence classes to give me a new equivalence class. Tyler.
I have to ask, like, kind of what is the point of multiplying them? Because you just sort of, it seems like you would just sort of get a random like equivalence class.
Yeah, it feels random. You're totally right. So when we do RSA encryption, what you ask, so when I take x cubed, what I'm doing is iterated multiplication, right? X times x times x. So we're defining multiplication of teams. We're actually going to start thinking about exponentiating a team by taking iterated multiplication of it with itself. Yeah? So we could have taken 71 times 71. That would be the square of that team. Exponentiated modular arithmetic, and then taking logarithms to undo the exponentiation. That's the encoding of RSA encryption, and then the logarithm part is the decoding. But we're using these cubes to do it.
That was,
right.
That was a lot of words.
Sorry. Yeah.
Where did you get the 7?
7 is, y'all can go if you need to go. It's the remainder when I take 40 divided by 11. Good question.
Did I get 3.6?
That's how many times. Okay, so it goes in there 3 whole times, right? So 11 goes in 3 times to hit 33.
Oh, and then you gotta do 40
then, yeah.
Minus
what?
33.
Modulo, that's on the thing, I don't remember more.
That's okay.
Oh yeah, modulo is much like how division was taught to us in the past,
mm-hmm.
like in elementary.
That's right.
Yeah.
Where before we thought about decimals.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
mm-hmm.
It's pretty much exactly that.
That's right. It is
really weird to go back like that after so long.
I know. It's funny that such a basic concept ends up being how we all were. A lot of our encryption is what a lot of our encryption is based on. And, yeah. What's up?
I only came yesterday when I got to the floor. I'm trying to see the
Transmitting.
So,
you're a student.